As I try to decipher the tremendous challenges of civility in our churches and in our current politics and public discourse, I often think that the rage in our body politic is related to the fear that abounds in our country. America, a great land of promise, if not the promised land, is unfulfilled by a people with a wilderness mentality.
That's the Reverend Dr. Dwight Andrews, and today he brings you a powerful message of faith and hope. I'm Peter Wallace. This is Day One.
Welcome to Day One, the weekly program that brings you outstanding preachers from America's mainline Protestant churches, sharing insight and inspiration from God's Word for your life. Now, here's our host, Peter Wallace, to introduce this week's speaker.
Thank you, Sherry. Today on Day One, we're honored to welcome the Reverend Dr. Dwight Andrews, Senior Minister of First Congregational United Church of Christ in downtown Atlanta, Georgia, and Associate Professor of Music at Emory University. Dwight received his bachelor's and master's degrees in music from the University of Michigan. He continued his studies at Yale University, earning a Master of Divinity degree and a PhD in music theory. He was ordained into the Christian ministry in 1978 by the United Church of Christ and served as a minister and teacher at Yale for over 10 years. Dwight has composed and recorded music for film, TV, and dance and can be heard on more than 20 record albums. Dwight, welcome to Day One.
It's good to be with you.
Your life has been deeply involved in preaching, teaching, community work, and music. Wonderful and rich endeavors. And yet I understand you consider it as a single public ministry, and that in each of these capacities, you think of yourself first and foremost as a minister. Tell us how it all works together and how you came to this multifaceted ministry.
Well, I think I came to all of these different parts of my single ministry over a long period of time. I think my life experience has helped me define ways in which I could minister in these many different communities and many different parts of my life. But most importantly, I discovered that when you're on a set of a movie or when you're behind stage on Broadway or whether you're in a classroom, that the presence of God's loving power can be valuable, invaluable wherever you are. In the early years, I thought, and quite selfishly, that the music was my way of balancing the work of ministry and of teaching. I loved music so much. But now I'm starting to see that the music itself is a ministry that I can take with me everywhere I go. So I'm discovering how all of the pieces fit together, and I feel much better for it.
You've been the senior minister of First Congregational UCC in Atlanta now for 15 years, a historic and beautiful church with a vibrant congregation. Give us a sense of the ministries of the church you serve.
Well, it's a historic African-American church that was formed right after the Civil War. So education was really at the core of its mission and ministry from its beginnings. It began actually as a school for ex-slaves. And so for over 147 years, that church has been in the heart of downtown Atlanta, ministering to all of the people of Atlanta, and I think in some ways forming a bridge to the many different communities that Atlanta represents. It's very exciting that as we move into our 21st century, that we are finding new ways to speak to an ever-diverse and growing community in downtown Atlanta. It will be a historic African-American church with a very diverse, perhaps not even completely African-American, community. So that presents wonderful opportunities and challenges, and so we're looking forward to the future.
And you're also a faculty member in the music department at Emory University. What are your primary areas of teaching?
Well, I'm a music theorist by training, and so I do courses for the music majors in terms of 20th century music theory and analysis. And I also do a very popular history of jazz course, which I love, for majors and non-majors. So I get a chance to teach subjects that I love. They're very different, but they all get a chance to enliven my understanding of music and how music and culture reflect one another.
Well, your sermon today focuses on Exodus chapter 16. Would you read it for us?
I'd be happy to. Now the whole congregation of the Israelites complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. The Israelites said to them, If only we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots and ate our fill of bread. For you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. Then the Lord said to Moses, I am going to rain bread from heaven for you, and each day the people shall go out and gather enough for that day. In that way I will test them, whether they will follow my instruction or not. On the sixth day, when they prepare for what they bring in, it will be twice as much as they gather on other days. The Lord spoke to Moses and said, I have heard the complaining of the Israelites. Say to them, at twilight you shall eat meat, and in the morning you shall have your fill of bread. Then you shall know that I am the Lord your God.
Dwight, your sermon is entitled, A Wilderness People in the Promised Land. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
And if you'd like to listen to today's program again or read or share a transcript of Dwight Andrews' sermon, call us toll-free at 1-888-411-DAY1 or visit us online at dayone.org.
This is Sherry Miller. Day One is supported almost entirely by donations from our faithful listeners and from churches and individuals who believe in our message. If you're among those who find meaning and inspiration in our weekly broadcasts, please consider making a generous financial offering to keep Day One on the air and fulfilling its mission. In almost 70 years, we have not missed one single weekly broadcast. But we ask for your help to ensure our future. Please send your gift to Day One, 2715 Peachtree Road, Atlanta, Georgia 30305. That's 2715 Peachtree Road, Atlanta, Georgia 30305. Or call us at 1-888-411-DAY1. Or give securely online at dayone.org. On behalf of everyone at Day One, we wish you all God's blessings.
The wilderness experience for the Hebrew children represents a troubling place. It is hostile terrain, and the basic necessities for survival are not present. There is a growing crisis that grows out of a fear of perishing. For Israel, the wilderness represents a place of dislocation and the unfamiliar. It represents the very real threat for their life. Perhaps the collective memory of the people had forgotten the brutality and violence of slavery. Now the present pangs of hunger outweighed the bitter taste of an enslaved past. The wilderness also becomes a place to locate the congregation's crisis of faith. The wilderness is the place, the crisis flashpoint between Egypt and the Promised Land. How ironic. The people who now feel threatened and abandoned have forgotten how mighty Yahweh brought them out of Egypt. Now they complain and express their rage, not to God, but to God's servant Moses. Have they forgotten the God who brought them out? Their complaints make no mention of Yahweh at all. They focus their energies against Moses and Aaron. how often it is that those who elect to serve God by serving His children bear the brunt of the community's fear, pain, and anger. This is a sober reminder for all of us that servant leaders of God often catch the dickens all along the way of their service. Not only does God provide in this story, we are told He provides abundantly. In addition to the bread and meat, He gives an extra provision so that the portion for the sixth day includes enough for the seventh day. God's grace is more than sufficient. Scripture tells us that Israel will soon learn that their wilderness is not empty, but is inhabited by the powerful presence of an all-powerful God. In the wilderness, in the midst of their concern for survival, God will provide and give the people what they need for life. It is God who steps in to provide the gifts of life, the manna and the bread from heaven. How good it is to know always that God's grace is sufficient to fill any need, to satisfy any hunger or thirst. In the midst of their fear, anxiety, and doubt, God does not reprimand, God provides. I want to look at this Exodus passage from a slightly different angle. Although the children of Israel had not yet reached the Promised Land, I want to consider how a wilderness people with a wilderness perspective can impact the Promised Land experience. Many of us are bewildered by today's times. We're terrified by diseases for which there are no cures. We are disappointed and frustrated by the wars and violence in the Middle East, Africa, and even within our own borders. We ask ourselves, when will it end, or even if it will end? Our own private and collective fears seem to be acted out in increasingly violent and volatile ways. Our public discourse about everything from education to immigration to justice and human rights is diminished and tainted by the vitriol, cynicism, and mean-spiritedness that comes from virtually every direction. In spite of our great abundance in this land of plenty, in this land of promise, our fears and anger, yes, even our lack of faith, causes us to act as if we are in a vast wilderness. And we are in a vast wilderness of despair and desperation. We are the wilderness people in the Promised Land. At a time when celebrity soundbite culture seems to rule the day, important social and policy matters and even faith issues take a back seat to what's trending on Twitter or the latest selfie that's gone viral. Our attention spans and willingness to spend any quality time has become, for too many of us, diminished to the length of a text message or a comment on Facebook. Herein lies a paradox. America, a great land of promise, if not the Promised Land, is unfulfilled by a people with a wilderness mentality. God has supplied the bread and the manna, yet our nation acts as if we are living in a great wilderness. We hoard our abundance, consume more than we could possibly ever need, and distance ourselves from the least of these in our midst. We purport a mythical, rugged individualism that denies the realities of our history. White privilege is the given, and its ascent rarely questioned. The lasting impact of racism and slavery is dismissed as no longer relevant. After all, we do have an African-American president and Oprah Winfrey. As I try to decipher the tremendous challenges of civility in our churches and in our current politics and public discourse, I often think that the rage in our body politic is related to the fear that abounds in our country. It is that fear that causes us to be the wilderness people. Like the Hebrew children, we survived bondage and slavery by God's grace, but our behavior as a community and as a people of God often belies the sense of promise that our present circumstance provides. We hunger but not for the bread of life. We thirst, but not for the living water. We are still bewildered and still confused. How can this happen in this great land of promise, in our promised land? I think our wilderness mentality represents the way in which we complain about the lack, not of food, but the lack of acquisitions. We hunger for more things, not the living water that enlivens our spirit. Our wilderness mentality has become the new slavery. This new slavery hungers for neither food nor for freedom. The new slavery is that in which the master is our own self-centered and self-absorbed way of seeing the world. Our preoccupation with ourselves represents that new form of slavery. I believe our dilemma is one of not being faithful to God. Proverbs 29 and 18 tells us that where there is no vision, the people perish. I want to add that where there is no faith in God, the people perish. If you don't know God, you perish, and we are perishing all the day long, not for bread, not for water, but for lack of God in our lives. But how could this happen? How could this happen in this land of plenty? I believe this struggle in the wilderness is the result of evil in our midst, a profound and powerful evil that produces systemic ways to keep us as slaves. This is particularly troubling to me when I see that many of the very tools that were used to help liberate African Americans in this country have now become the weapons to produce the new slavery. Education was once a tool for the building of a self-sustaining African American community. Now it seems to be a tool for the new slavery. Our children are miseducated and not properly prepared for a life of contribution. New technologies like the selfie, if we are not careful, can become a new tool for slavery. Our preoccupation with ourselves leaves no room for God and consequently creates a wilderness mentality, even in this land of plenty. In previous generations, education was a vehicle for community empowerment, and it helped all of our future generations prepare themselves for self-sufficiency. And many of our ancestors, even though they themselves were not educated, saw education and faith as a means to a new freedom. They sang spirituals that testified to the oneness of humanity and the redemptive power of God. Didn't my Lord deliver Daniel? Then why not every man? But I believe that our present musical culture no longer represents the aspiration of a people. Art is no longer art, but purely a commodity to serve the interest of the marketplace. The irony of our time is that our forebears, many who were not educated, saw to it that their children were educated so that the community could be transformed. Yet another irony is in the arena of the arts. We don't often think of arts education in the schools in connection with the growing prison industrial complex in this country. Yet I believe there's a correlation between disabling our students and their sense of creativity, discipline, and independence, and the rise of our young people in the privatized prison industrial complex. Take the creative spirit out of the children. Make them think that all they can do is create beats and rhymes or play basketball. Make them stop challenging the world with their creativity and create art that acquiesces to the stereotypes and the low expectations of the status quo. When art does not empower, when schools do not educate, when students are not enabled, they become primed for a life of dependency and even prison. We are a wilderness people in the promised land. Our creativity is not for our own freedom and liberation. Rather, we are becoming amazingly adept at consuming the most degrading and poisonous products about ourselves within the African American community. This is wilderness behavior the behavior fitting of a people who are still enslaved. This is the new slavery. We have always been a creative people, and our art and our expression, our songs and our faith have always been acts of liberation. When the slave codes in the South prohibited the African captives from playing their African instruments on the plantation, they played the sticks and the bones and the spoons. They even played their own bodies like a drum. In every generation, we've been creating and creative in a way that was life-affirming. But perhaps for the first time in our history in this country, we have stopped creating for our own life and spiritual uplift. Now our creative purpose seems to be driven by a materialism like we've never seen before. We as a people should be concerned that we act like we don't have anything when in fact God has provided us with everything. Isn't this the message of Exodus? We seem driven by what we lack rather than living in gratitude for what we have. We've stopped protesting and accept the brutality of our world as a given, intractable, and unchangeable. How many more of our children will die over a pair of expensive sneakers? This is wilderness behavior. Dr. King reminds us that an individual has not started living until he can rise above the narrow confines of his individualistic concerns to the broader concerns of all humanity. The wilderness can be a place of forgetting God and finding God, of denying God and affirming God. Jesus' encounter with the devil in the wilderness tells us that evil often appeals to our most basic instincts, our hunger for power and for things. My fervent prayer is that we give up being people of the wilderness and become the people of promise. We can affirm the love of God wherever we are. Amen.
Now, Dwight Andrews offers some final thoughts on his message today with our host, Peter Wallace.
Dwight, thank you for your powerful sermon. We're going to do something a bit different this time. We'll be playing one of your musical performances, your arrangement of the Lord's Prayer, or an excerpt of it. But before we do, what's one thing from your sermon today that you hope our listeners will keep in mind this week?
I think the one thing that I would like everyone to take away from this sermon is that God's grace is always sufficient. Whether we're in the wilderness or the promised land, God always provides.
Dwight Andrews, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Day One is the voice of America's mainline Protestant churches. Visit us online at dayone.org. Our program is recorded and edited by Donald Jones and produced by Peter Wallace. Thank you for joining us. I'm Sherry Miller, wishing you all God's blessings on day one and forever.